Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, coming from some of the most interesting people in the professional snow and ice management industry. To learn about their successes, to hear about the challenges they've faced along the way, and to have their perspective on critical issues facing our industry today. Before we get started, I'd like to invite you to follow our social media feeds and to check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com. Please welcome your host, Phil Harwood.
All right, welcome back, Snowfighters. I am so excited to have today with us as a special guest, Ted Lucia from Lucia Landscaping. Ted's the president of the company, and the company's located in the Detroit metro area, just outside of Detroit, north of Detroit, I believe, in Roseville, Michigan, kind of my old stomping grounds, so we might have some good conversations about that. But Ted, thank you so much for taking time. I know you're a busy man and have a lot going on. You've been traveling, so thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to join and have a little good discussion here. So,
yeah. Well, me too. And I love talking about snow in the heat of the battle, like the heat of the summer. Like right now, you know, it's been 90 degrees. It's been scorching hot here in August in Michigan and humid. But I've been following you on social media for many years and very impressed by all the things that I see you guys doing. And we're going to talk about some of those things. But I know you love snow because you're posting about snow all the time, even in August. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, snow never sleeps, right? So you got to get started early, but we're excited about it. I know it's hot out, it's warm out. It's been storming over here lately, but we're getting ready for snow. And I guess to run a larger snow operation, you got to be thinking about it 12 months of the year. So it's really important for sure. To us.
Yeah, it's really turned into a year-round business. Absolutely. Yeah. And it has for years, but it's really, really becoming a year-round focus to do it well, with all the technology and equipment and purchasing and training and all the things, you know. And that's really why the Snowfighters Institute exists, really, is to help people, you know, prepare, because it takes so much investment. But how did you get into snow? And did you always, are you a native to Michigan, to you who grew up in the, get, you know, playing in the snow like I did, or at what point did you fall in love with the snow?
Yeah, used to climb into more snow walking back from school when I was younger, but we still get a good amount of snow. So yeah, I grew up in Michigan. I've been in Michigan my whole life, born and raised in a city called Grosse Pointe, which is just north of Detroit. And when I was younger, I used to build some pretty cool snow forts. So that was a pretty exciting time period for me. Always, you know, liked snow. I don't know if I loved snow, but, you know, I've grown to love it and just kind of embrace what it stands for. Obviously, a big supporter of Michigan and the Midwest here. But it's, it seems like we used to get a lot more snow when we were, when I was younger, at least. Mm-hmm. We get a lot more, I'd say snowfalls now that, you know, kind of come and go in waves, and a lot more freezing events with, you know, rain to snow events over the last 3 years. So there's a lot more to give consideration to. But, you know, I got into the snow business probably when I was 12, 13 years old, working with my brothers. Started off, you know, just with a shovel and a snowblower. Doing neighbors' driveways, and we did a nice job at that. Usually, you'd have to wake up early before school and knock it out, right? So it teach you or taught a little bit about discipline, and you know how to make some extra money, kind of taught some lessons in life. But that was kind of preliminarily how I got into snow, and how it expanded from there is, you know, obviously more lengthy of a story.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's cool. I got to be honest. Well, when I was 12, I was not interested in shoveling anyone's sidewalks except my own. If my dad made me, and he certainly wasn't paying me. So I'm impressed by that thoroughly. Maybe I didn't have the right brothers. I don't know. But so I want to talk, obviously we want to talk about snow. This is the Snow Fighters Institute podcast, but I want to just talk about your business more generally in terms of what the service scope that you guys are into, and kind of maybe just talk to us about, you know, what is Lucia Landscape?
Yeah, so primarily landscape and snow company, more maintenance services than we are kind of that design build industry, although it is some of the services we perform. We try to align with one team, one solution service, so kind of that one-stop shop for our clients. And so we do, you know, provide ultimately anywhere from landscape maintenance to enhancements to some design build work, including hardscapes, irrigation lighting, into snow removal as well. Snow has become, I'd say over the last 5 to 10 years, a much larger service for us. So something that we intentionally focused in on. While it might be something that is, you know, really a 3 to 4 month service in the winter, like we had talked about, it really becomes 12 months of working on it and planning to build it out. So we've taken a lot larger proactive approach to it. And because we've been so intentional about it, we've really been able to grow it, with very targeted clients that we service, and we love those clients. I mean, we've created great relationships with them. A lot of them we've, you know, prospected to work with, and been very transparent about that. But they're clients that, you know, we like to service, right? So we have a great partnership with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I saw, on just your social feeds was, it looked like you guys were getting into parking lot maintenance. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So just kind of that, again, going towards that one team, one solution aspect, it seems like it's been a good tie-in service, something that we've been exploring for quite a while. And, you know, obviously it's a great tie-in to snow as well. Right. So in terms of snow removal business, mm-hmm. Parking lot Absolutely. Maintenance kind of sinks right in. Mm-hmm. The synergies are there. So that's a new service we started offering this year. We've been kind of building that out for the last couple of years, but have finally launched this year. And we obviously, you know, our goal is to expand that market. But anything from, you know, seal coating, striping, to, you know, sweeping, to, you know, new insulation of pavement. So it's an exciting time period for us.
Totally fits in 100%. Yep. I mean, you're taking care of the same parking lot year round.
Yep. Yeah.
You're fixing it in the summer and you're destroying it in the winter sometimes.
Yeah.
And by any fault of your own.
Right. Exactly. and you know, a lot of contracts, I'm sure a lot of individuals see out there too, even on the sweeping side, right? A lot of the, you know, towards the end of the season, a sweeping might be included in the contract, might not be included, might be something you want to pitch, you know, or potentially even offer as an add-on, you know, for free as a service to pick up the client. So it's been a good journey for us so far.
Yeah, in preparation for our talk today, I spent some time on your website and I see the word Midwest, you know, or mm-hmm. Midwest company, and the word Midwest implies different things to different people. You know, we used to know what the Big Ten meant as well, but now mm-hmm. the Big Ten goes across coast to coast.
Yeah.
So what does the Midwest mean to you?
Yeah. So, you know, primarily, obviously we started off as a Michigan-based company and, you know, everyone in this area has been great to us to work with. So we've expanded that service level across several different sectors. Currently, we probably have more of a focus on the Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana markets, especially where like the snow zones are. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of following some of our clients too, right? So as long as strategically the clients align with our values and where they're growing, you know, we're looking at opportunities to grow with them as well. And they're, mm-hmm. you know, frankly, looking at the same with us, right? If they can kind of, you know, go to one source as well, That's their preference, as long as we're delivering, you know, on the quality service that they've come to expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally makes sense. Before we move too much further into snow, I just want to talk a little bit about this one team, one solution concept. It's pervasive. It's throughout. You've mentioned it a couple of times, and even just talking about your clients, you know, being a good fit culturally, talk to us about what that means to you.
Yeah. I think that's good. Good question. Very important. I know in a lot of our presentations to clients, obviously, some of them are on site, our headquarters or facility, and we're always excited to take them on a tour. But you know, a lot of meetings are on Teams or Zoom, right? And we're very transparent about what we stand for, what our core values are, and to make sure there's an alignment there with the clients. But one team is one of our core values. I'd say it's a pinnacle of our core values. Created many years ago. We actually just got it registered as a trademark for our company. And, you know, it's not just about the employees, although that's very important. It's about, you know, people, the team, the partnership, who we work with, how well we align. And it stands for something bigger. So it stands for who we are today and who will be tomorrow and how we operate together. And ultimately, that's, you know, when it's done right, it creates an opportunity for all of us together as a team. You know, we're better together than we are individually. So it's a highlight of our core values and our system and how we operate. You know, I wear it on my arm every day. Mm-hmm. Our field staff, we have it on our, you know, our shoulder, our muscle, on our shirts. And on one side and the other side, it says Unikipo in Spanish. And so it's a good reminder of what we stand for and how we need to behave in front of, you know, our clients and our peers.
Absolutely love it. Core values, mission, just those cultural statements, those are defining, you know, cultural norms that can get really, that can become very powerful in companies if they make the investment. So I love companies that really have made that investment and you can just see it. And so,
we're absolutely love it. We're heavily tied to the culture here. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about our company, our industry and what we do. And frankly, you know, it's very important for me because it hits on some of the, you know, my life goals. So yesterday, actually, we were awarded best place to work in Southeastern Michigan by Cranes.
Congratulations.
Which we're very excited about. You know, hard achievement for our industry specifically. There's a lot of, you know, financial firms on there, healthcare firms, technology sectors. So it's tough for, you know, kind of that trades industry. But it, you know, I think it shows that if you spend time, you know, hard time working on something, and it's not, you know, building a culture is not easy. And it's definitely not easy to hold intact either. It's you know, building it, maintaining it, which sounds just like our industry, right? And if you're able to do that, you know, you can grow and build something, you know, unique. So our team's really excited about it. And, you know, we'll just keep working on it because culture is important to us.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. So, let's talk a little bit more about snow, cause we love snow in August when it's 90 degrees out. I love this on your website as well. You have just straight up application for service partners. And I think that's so smart. Like, just cut the chase, like, tell us who you are. We're looking for you. We need service partners. So talk to us about that model. What's the, maybe start with, you know, the ratio, if you don't mind, unless it's proprietary, between, you know, what you self-perform and what you don't self-perform, and kind of what your model is for working with service partners.
Yeah. So we come from a self-performing background. So, you know, as of maybe 3-4 years ago, we were 80-90% plus self-performing. and you know, historically 100% self-performing. We love that model. Our model is, you know, a hybrid model. So, you know, we do utilize service partners and high quality ones that we have, you know, maintained or great relationships with in different areas. And we hybrid that model to back it up, obviously, to make sure we're performing. So we're not going to just, you know, take work for sake of taking work and over leverage ourselves. But we are, you know, in it in terms of for our clients, making sure that if they need the right, you know, service provider, we can help make sure that everything that they expected is completed towards that expectation level. And so we're managing through that.
And if someone was listening who would be a potential service partner for you, what would you say to them would be some of the benefits of working with Lucia Landscaping as a service partner?
Yeah. So a lot more benefits to come, and it's a lot of the program that we're currently working on. So this is ever changing very quickly. I guess, you know, one of the advantages of working with us is we're, you know, we don't lowball. Maybe expand upon that a little bit. So our clients are typically not the, you know, low bid, low cost clients. They're the clients that have pain points that we've figured out for them, and we've you know, built or created an investment in with these clients, right? And so we're paid well by them. We're paid for the services that we offer, which are high quality service, and we expect to pay our service partners the same way. So I'd say that's a starting point. You know, two, you know, obviously, there's some technology behind the scenes too, that we provide to our service partners. And then I'd say three would be, you know, a method to grow, right? So, you know, if we can help out individuals that are looking to grow further, right, through some of the networking, some of our sales techniques, some of our partnerships, you know, we're looking to grow with the right people. And I think that kind of stands for that one team. Down the road, we will have a whole menu of additions in terms of, you know, kind of why to partner with our company. A lot of that is getting built out currently. And we're just, you know, we don't want to go from A to Z. We're looking to do it at a steady rate and just, you know, work with the right people at the right time. So.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. And I think there's some really good benefits to someone who's maybe early in their career or younger to partner with someone like you guys. You know, you've been around for what, 31 years now, top 100 contractor, you're winning awards. Like, you can sell work that, you know, someone who's a rookie has no idea how to go out and get. They could never get the jobs that you have. So to partner with someone like you and benefit from learning and being part of the family, I think that's a really smart move. So I love your approach. Just do it well, don't rush it. And that hybrid model works very well. That was my background as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just, you know, we're very strategic thinkers. So I think it's, there's a lot of strategy on it as well. And, you know, and there's strategy too on working with the right service partners. And they learn a lot too from the way we operate, which, you know, can obviously help them. We've learned a ton from this industry, and we're continually learning, right? And I'm sure you're a good example of that, from a consulting level to, you know, a peer group level, the learning curve never ends. So I think kind of partnering with the right companies just advances that learning curve. I'm one of the biggest believers in, you know, partnering with peers. So
Well, let's switch gears and talk about technology a little bit. If you don't mind sharing with us kind of some of your go-to technology solutions. I'd love to hear about software or, you know, GPS stuff or cameras or any cool toys that you have kind of built into your model. People always love hearing about that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the companies out there have a lot of fun toys now. technology is pretty key. So I'd say, you know, most of the stuff we do is obviously cloud-based, which, you know, is really important, just the accessibility of it, right, from anywhere. But anywhere from, you know, GPS to site cameras, right, that kind of monitor weather conditions, or, you know, essentially weather stations, ground temperature, air temperature, humidity levels, you know, gathering content, typically, you know, solar operated, you know, that can take a picture every 5 to 30 minutes, whatever, you know, you kind of program it you know, weather alerts, you know, and that functionality via text or email, to, you know, kind of the proactive, you know, emails that are sent to clients, right? Mm-hmm. Informing them of snow alerts or expectations for servicing their property, right? Which is a great communication tool, and relieves a lot of issues, right? Or client call-ins, mm-hmm. You know, through that, you know, high-end communication. To, you know, service verification, obviously check in, check out, photos, time stamped. That's, you know, that's a big one for what clients want to mm-hmm. know you can deliver on. Mm-hmm. You know, and to, you know, a lot of API integrations that we're currently working on, nice. For ourselves and, you know, some of our clients as well, just on, you know, their current demands of what, you know, either our demands or wish list items for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about equipment? Are there certain types of equipment that you prefer? Are you moving toward away from like pickup trucks toward ag tractors or loaders or, yeah. you know, kind of what, where are you at with that? And maybe talk to us about sidewalk equipment too. People are always interested in that.
Yeah. I know everyone's got their favorites. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, there's some great stuff out there. So I'm not going to comment on what's not good. But what I will say is, you know, and I think a lot of what we decide on too can be a little bit towards, you know, the market you're in. Right. So mm-hmm. if you're in a, you know, John Deere market, you know, you're going to love John Deere's, right. Mm-hmm. We've decided, we're mainly, Caterpillar, is kind of who we've aligned with. I mean, we still have some Bobcat equipment out there, but mainly Caterpillar. That was more from a service and parts. I'd say even especially parts. I mean, we service most of our own equipment, but you know, you got, we're in a 24/7 emergency response industry. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared to call in whoever you need to call in at the right time. So, mm-hmm. So that was a reason for Caterpillar. So skids, front end loaders are all Caterpillar. We, you know, have a few different options of push boxes. We've kind of been probably like a lot of companies sampling everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we're pretty heavy into the Metal Plus at this point. You know, we have all kinds of different stuff. So, but sure. we love the cutting, you know, the scrape, you know, to pavement on that live edge.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
And I think it's just better for our clients in general, right? Cleaner pavement equals less salt, you know, that needs to be used, which probably equals less liability, right? So we've kind of stuck with that model, and we're planning on sticking with that model at least for the foreseeable future. Not cheap, but but I don't think, you know, we're paid to be cheap, so.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And then, snow plows, you know, made a decision a while back. I think, you know, kind of when we first started, we went the Western route. You know, it seems like people are either Boss or Western. Western has been a great product for us. You know, we want scalability. So like in our landscape season, we're primarily Exmark. That's for, you know, that's not just for scalability. I mean, for, you know, our mechanics, right? For troubleshooting, mm-hmm. Issues, and then parts as well. So Western's been great to us. That's primarily on the snowplow side. We run a lot of pickup trucks with, Western salters in them for, mm-hmm. you know, like smaller sites. So those kind of, you know, half acre to maybe 2-3 acre sites. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once you get into the larger sites, are usually front end loaders or wheel loaders with some type of metal plus box on it. And then, you know, larger dump trucks with larger salters in them. Typically, you know, some type of V-box, which we've had better success in. We use primarily Western products for that. Mm-hmm. Then on the ice melter side, for, I guess, liquid brine capabilities, we've been utilizing Snow-X for that. Different sizes, and it's worked, we've worked pretty well. We're kind of exploring our options there as well, just to see, you know, there's plenty of good options in that market. Mm-hmm. So, we do have, just because where headquarters is, you know, there's some, local manufacturers. So I think that's influenced some of, you know, our decisions. And then, sidewalks, we love those snow raiders. Those are great machines for us. You know, I know different people in different markets use different machines, Ventrac, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But the snow raiders have been really great for us. I think, you know, they're almost the equivalent of like 3 to 5 people, right?
I agree.
So, mm-hmm. you know, depending on the site and how it's getting operated, the drop spreader in them has been a nice addition compared to kind of more of that broadcast spreader. You know, it's very mm-hmm. efficient. The liquid brine, you know, standard stock liquid brine tank in it. It's a great addition. They're awesome machines. And I wish we could use them all year long instead of putting them, you know, in right. kind of storage.
Yeah, they're great machines. Right.
But I think for the price point, what you get out of them is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you may know, Caterpillar and Douglas Dynamics, which owns Western, are two of our largest sponsors. So they'll be happy to hear that you're mentioning their names on this podcast. So talk to us a little bit more about liquid brine, because I, you know, in my experience, I think there's very few contractors that have found success with liquids here in Michigan. And I don't mm-hmm. know if it's the
yeah.
humidity levels or the adoption rate by the property managers who all get together and talk about us, you know, in their meetings,
yeah,
their BOMA meetings, you know, seems like they all have kind of group think sometimes. So how have you incorporated liquids into your program?
I think we started with liquids, I'm going to say 6 to 8 years ago. And, you know, some of that was based on salt pricing, right? Obviously, the higher salt prices are, the more encouraging it looks to, you know, search for another resource, which would be kind of, you know, a brine or a hot brine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been a lot of testing, right? I mean, there's, especially it beginning in the Michigan market, we've had great success with it in some areas and other, you know, areas where we need to figure out ways to improve it. So just to give you an example of that, especially the last few years, we've gotten a lot of rain to snow events, which, you know, essentially kind of dilute the product. Right. And, you know, obviously we love the idea that it's a, you know, one of the true proactive services out there, for our industry and snow removal. And, you know, you can lay this product up to 48 hours in advance, potentially melt up to 1 inch of snow, with, you know, with a hot brine mix. It's, you know, organic, it's, you know, it's clear. It's less corrosive, right? It's, you know, I think it goes down to like -20 some degrees, right? Mm-hmm. So right. it's a pretty powerful product, and when used correctly though. And I think that's at least what we've learned is probably one of the most important points. So through some technology, through a lot of experience, we've kind of figured out when to use it and when not to use it. And so we don't use it for every event, but we do use it pretty frequently. And every year we're using it more and more. We've had, you know, probably the most issues with it, like I was saying, on the rain to snow events. and or when, you know, and I'm sure the weather's like this everywhere, but, you know, when you think you're getting snow and it starts with rain to snow, or the forecast changes, right? Mm-hmm. From, you know, 48 hours in advance. And the last couple of years, like I was saying, we've just had a lot of temperatures fluctuating around freezing. And so it just becomes a little tricky. So,
yeah,
but it's
definitely a learning curve.
Great. Yeah. It's quite the learning curve, but it's great. And it's also great on, you know, walkways or mm-hmm. areas, you know, close to entrance ways for commercial clientele. I mean, you know, we've all walked into a pharmacy or whatever and rock salt all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm always
slipping on it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's corrosive. Mm-hmm. So this is just a nice alternative for the clients, and to reduce, you know, liability, you know, break that snow bond as well. So as long as you know, especially in the colder winters, this is an incredible product to use. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. No, that's great. And, you know, we've done a lot of training on liquids at Snow Fighters Institute, and, you know, our approach has always been, like, start with the sidewalks, because that's really where the most, like you say, doorways, that's the most critical area to really figure this stuff out, and then and then build from there. So, well, let's move in a different direction here. I want to hear a little bit about labor and recruiting, and, you know, how do you get people to come work for you? Obviously, the culture, I'm sure, factors in huge, but what's kind of your go-to strategy for recruiting? Where are you finding people, and how are you holding on to them?
Good question. So I would say recruiting, probably one of my favorite topics, in terms of something I'm pretty passionate about. And I think inside of our company, everyone knows that we spend a lot of time on it. And it's not just recruiting in general, it's just, you know, also tied to the culture of the company. So I think over the last probably 4 or 5 years, finding good talent has been one of the most difficult things. You know, you can certainly probably find some good clients to work for, but if you don't have the right people, you know, you're pretty much worthless, right? So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's everything's really about people and the right people. So I think there's a few factors here. One for our company is we really try and be intentional about hiring based on character qualities rather than technical skills, right? So does the person, you know, have the core makeup to fit our core values, right? And how would we kind of rate them on that? And if they do, can we teach them the technical skills? And then I guess beyond that, do we have the capabilities to teach them on technical skills? Meaning, do we have training programs, right? Or consistent training or safety programs? We've, you know, so that being said, you still then got to get people in the door. Mm-hmm. And you got to get people attracted to your company. So we've used several techniques for that. Obviously, you know, one would be, you know, our company or media presence, right? And we always want to be out there at the forefront in terms of, you know, what it looks and feels like to work for our company, right? So that shouldn't be a surprise when someone comes in the door. You know, and I think that kind of speaks to why we have a newer facility, or, you know, at least our headquarters, right? We want to work in a nice environment. We want to work in a place that people feel safe, comfortable, that they're excited about, maybe that, you know, that they can brag about, right? Mm-hmm. That's exciting for us. And, you know, from the moment they enter, you know, pull up to where our facility is, the moment they enter the building, it's the way they feel about it. So that's a component. You know, then there's the obviously recruiting or job ad side of, you know, trying to bring these people in, right, through the right job ads, job descriptions, where they're placed, you know, is it from Indeed to Facebook or wherever it is, job boards, how we're going to find them and source them. Then obviously reviewing the resumes, and then going through the, you know, proper cadence to kind of vet them out, who they're meeting with, right? You know, we work with a lot of Hispanic individuals as well, right? And so, you know, does our culture represent them as well? Because they have, you know, very strong family values, which are really important to us, right? And then, you know, can we speak the language, right? Or speak enough to get by, and have a good conversation with them. So those are all important areas for us. And then just kind of being unique in how we recruit and source. There's some good books out there, I will say. You know, I read a great book through one of my peer groups. It's called Who? And it's a great recruiting book in terms of how to recruit talent. And that kind of walks you through all the steps of how to effectively do it. And I've taken a lot away from that book. There's some amazing podcasts on recruiting. And so, you know, those podcasts can range from techniques to technology. And so I think there's, you know, it's all about how much time you want to invest in something and, you know, how much you want to be an expert at it.
Yeah. Well, like you say, you know, the people side of our business is the most consequential aspect. And for years, the most difficult part of running a business these days with labor shortages and all the other things that go into it. Not to mention the crazy cost of labor that's skyrocketed in the last few years, trying to stay ahead of that.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of younger listeners to our podcast, and they love to hear about, you know, just advice about the industry, getting involved in peer groups or associations or even attending trade shows or what kind of advice would you have for a up-and-comer in the industry?
So maybe I stole this from someone. I'm not sure. But I think there's power of peers. I call it POP, P-O-P.
Okay.
So I think that there is no better learning curve than your peers in the industry. I was fortunate enough to, you know, start off, I'm in a couple peer groups now, but, you know, one of them were, you know, I found out how important it is to advance your learning curve or how you can through peers, right? And so peers could be in a peer group. They could be at a convention. You know, I know one of my snow consultants I work with, a great, great individual. I met him at a snow convention and asked him if he would, you know, consult for our company years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I wouldn't have that opportunity if I didn't show up to one of these shows, right? Or, you know, didn't, you know, invest, you know, with myself or our team to kind of explore something different. So I'd say just that power of meeting individuals, whether it's experts or just individuals like ourselves, either starting off as a company or, you know, expert level professionals, right, operating in this environment. They all come in different sizes. And, you know, I think they're all happy to, you know, for the most part, to share their experience and some tips. I've met some incredible people in our industry that some of them I still work with today. You know, and when I first met them, you know, we were a very small snow company. And they've all, you know, been part of the story and help shape the story of who we are today. So kind of just taking a little piece, you know, a little nugget here and there. If, you know, you go to a show, you know, your goal is just to take 1 of 3 nuggets out of that show, right? Mm-hmm. And then figure out how you're going to apply them. But if you take 20 to 50, you know, and try to apply it, it just becomes very difficult. So you're better off just taking 1 to 3, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I always say that. In fact, there's plenty of times I'll start out one of our workshops or talk I'm doing and saying, look, at the end of this, you need to kind of look back over your notes and flag the one thing that you're taking away. You know, Gary Keller's one thing approach. Well, we're kind of winding down here. I'm interested in just knowing if there's anything else that you would love to share with our audience and that we haven't talked about.
I just want to expand one more thing on that. When you're taking these nuggets out of the show, I think it's also important to be able to bring those back to your team. And, you know, our company uses EOS format, which, you know, I'm sure a good amount of companies out there utilize, but
yes,
there's a cadence for that format. And I think it's important to take what you learn out of something. It could be out of the show. It could be out of a, you know, like a serial podcaster in terms of listening to them. I love listening to them. I love kind of soaking in knowledge and advancing my learning curve. And then helping others too, so that they're encouraged by it and can take that information and run with it. But in terms of getting back to EOS, you know, if you take these nuggets and kind of turn them into rocks or to-dos, depending on, you know, that cadence, they're very powerful. And there's a lot of advancements you can make within that. And, you know, typical companies probably, you know, grow at, I don't know, 3 to 5% per year, right? There's no reason, you know, in our industry, you can't grow 10%+ per year easily. Sure. So there's a lot of good information there. And, you know, and taking advantage of industry experts like yourself, from whatever that means, consulting level or peer group level, I think are huge for especially the younger individuals out there. If I could have done it all over again, I would have done it much sooner. It's an investment, but it pays off very quickly.
Yeah. If someone is not familiar with EOS, EOS Worldwide is the website, or hit me up or track down Ted. EOS is a really good process.
Yeah.
Very good. My company was one of the original EOS guinea pig companies when Gino was putting all this together. And we met right in his office in Livonia, Michigan for several years. And really, you know, I think Gino, to a large degree, inspired me to start doing consulting work, you know, 15 years ago or so. What's your favorite podcast? You mentioned podcasting. What's your go-to one? What's the one that you're just dying to listen to when a new episode comes along?
So, you know, I got quite the library of them.
I'm sure you do.
I will tell you, like in my original library, it was there's a book, Entree Leadership.
Yes.
Sounds like you've read it. Yes. And so I love that podcast, Entree Leadership. I think it's been really powerful in terms of just motivation. I think they do a good job. There's several other great ones out there. They're, you know, some are industry specific, some aren't, but I'd say that one probably hits, you know, one of the top for me. So
nice.
I'm all
Thank
about motivating our team. And then you just, you know, you take some nuggets out of it and share those nuggets or share the podcast. And there's great ones, you know, as well, like I was saying on recruiting, it's all about, you know, what you want to kind of specialize in, be an expert at, or, you know, what are your pain points, you know, this month, this year, and then focusing in on them.
Fantastic. Well, let's leave it at that. Ted, again, thank you so much for being our guest. And it was
Thanks
great to see
me.
You. And glad we took time out to do this. And hope you have a great winter. We're due for a big one. You know,
it's been
a while, but
it's going to be huge.
We've had over 100 inches in Detroit. I think we're due.
Yeah. Yeah. We're excited about what this winter is going to bring forward. We certainly, like everyone else, putting a lot of work into it. So we're hoping winter will turn up the cold a little bit for us.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you again.
Thanks, Phil.
Great to see you. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Snowfighters Institute podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, become a subscriber today so you won't miss any future episodes. Don't forget, please check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.